KTEL Records presents Rock Under Fire.
Welcome back to Rock Under Fire. It's episode 30. It's kissing time.
Kissing time.
We want to welcome the Kiss fans. A lot of new subscribers came to us by way of our Kiss ads this summer.
Really?
And, yeah, there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
I put up a simple picture of Love Gun in June around the time of the 40th anniversary of the release of Love Gun. A lot of people were very responsive to that, so
that,
I guess
that reached over 4,000 people. That one post on Facebook.
I guess that's what happens when you put money out and boost your posts, man. I guess that helps.
Oh yeah, that too.
That always helps.
Got to pay for that advertising.
Finding these things out.
Becoming whores.
What's with these Kiss fans? Don't they have enough from all the other Kiss podcasts that are out there? There's 100 of them out there.
Right at the outset, we are not a Kiss podcast.
No.
What we do is we talk all things
tonight. We
rock and roll.
We're going to turn into one.
We look at 7 decades of rock and roll. We are a bi-weekly podcast. For those of you mathematically challenged like me, that's 2 episodes a month. Anyway, Mike DiRico here. I'm joined by Pat Ivanitsky and Stick Nixon.
What's going on, fellas?
What's up, y'all?
So
we usually have us three. It's the trio, three co-hosts. Every once in a while, we're joined by a fourth co-host. And every once in a while, we'll have we'll open up the door and the mailman. We'll see what the mailman dropped on our stairs.
This is how the purists like it, though.
Yeah.
Just the three of us. Just the three original members. Just like Kiss. A little foreshadowing.
Yeah.
My position on things.
But we've been doing all summer, we've spent this summer of 2017 kind of looking back at the years 1967 and 1977. We did a couple of really cool episodes regarding those years. Without even trying, we cover everything from doo-wop through Elvis Presley and Chuck Berry, Bob Dylan, the Beatles. We could be talking about Cheap Trick. We could be talking about the Velvet Underground, Patti Smith, The Strokes, Judas Priest. But somehow, every freaking episode, Kiss comes up.
I was going to say, in doing so, we're talking about bands that sometimes you like and sometimes you don't.
Yeah, but
you're not always going to like the bands we talk about.
Why does it always come back to Kiss?
And Kiss always comes back.
And why does it
always
come
back to Kiss?
Why, though? I mean, I know the answer. Why? All three of us we're diehard Kiss fans. There's no rhyme or reason. That's the only reason. I mean, that's it. We're Kiss fans.
The inevitable Kiss episode was coming up at some point, and I said, well, you know, while we're doing 77... how can we tie? We were going to do something. I guess what I originally wanted to do for August was do something with Elvis.
Yeah.
You know, commemorating the 40th anniversary of Elvis dropping dead in his bathroom.
Thank you very much.
And then it occurred to me, you know, it's going to be the 40th anniversary. Oh, there's all kinds. There's a 40th anniversary every freaking day. But
7 years ago,
you know,
I had my
it's 40 years since the, you know, the historic, legendary nights at the LA Forum where Alive 2 was recorded. And I say, okay, when we get to the end of August, it's going to be our 30th episode, which is kind of cool in itself. We've made it this far.
Yeah.
And it would be kind of cool to do our Kiss Up episode here. So here we are. For those of you that are just joining us, we usually open up the first 10-15 minutes of each episode with a segment called What's Going On, where we talk about what we're listening to, anything we may have discovered, anything in the news. Usually it's who died, because somebody always dies.
Sure enough, somebody did die.
Who
not
died
rock
this
and roll,
week?
But who was Jerry Lewis. I mean,
okay,
well,
Jerry
he was
Lewis.
Not rock and roll, but I mean, he's an icon.
Nope,
in his own
far
movie.
From it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely not rock and roll. The only thing about rock and roll with him is when he was playing that song with that band and trying to get that little two-step going.
Although I do remember Labor Day weekend,
sure,
1979, seeing Kiss
on the telethon.
A clip of on the telethon, and they, you know, it was the Sure Know Something video.
Yeah.
But back then, you know, as a 9-year-old kid, you didn't know it was just a
that.
Pre-recorded video.
Sure Know Something, love it.
Yeah,
love it.
But yeah, we'll be talking about Dynasty a little bit later on. I guess we're going to go chronologically, but what's going on here? What do we have to talk about before we get into Kiss?
Yeah.
Anything going on?
I was going to give you guys my first book report. I had to talk about this last time. It took me 6 months to finish this friggin' book, and I love it.
So what do we have here?
It's called Rip It Up and Start Again by Simon Reynolds. Post-punk, 1978 to 1984. Brilliant. It's called Rip It Up and Start Again. Post-punk music, 1978 to 1984 by Simon Reynolds. The title kind of suggested like punk is dead in like 79 or 78. I never thought of it that way. But I guess the book does take place in between that, I don't know, that period of years where punk really blew up and then heavy metal really blew up. I think a lot of the early days of MTV bands, you know. All this wonderful stuff's happening, you know. Public Image Limited, Depeche Mode.
Stuff I never really got into, but...
And you have to. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Joy Division, Echo and the Bunny Man. We're too busy. Liked. We're too busy being heavy metal dirtbags in the 80s to know that all this wonderful stuff is going on. And now we got to catch up. Well, it's about doing your homework, you know. I'm into a lot of that stuff. I think fucking Joy Division's fucking badass.
I tried to listen to Joy Division, man. It just bores the fuck out of me. I can't see what the big thing about Joy Division is.
I can relate to what you're saying, but not in the Joy Division's case.
And I'm just not in Ian Curtis. I think it's Ian Curtis himself. And you know, there are a lot of people out there.
It's usually the singer when you hate a popular band. It's usually the singer.
There's going to be a lot of people calling
string
for my head
up
after today.
Kill the singer.
Yeah. All this great shit's going on.
Do they talk about Wipers in there?
Briefly. I believe they appear very briefly in that book, dude. Very briefly. Right? But at any rate, man, the fucking scholarship is incredible, man. I mean, I got to give this dude his props, man. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable. The sheer work that must have went into this is breath-fucking-taking.
Does that get into Gang of Four?
Yeah, big time. Yeah. This is a superhuman endeavor, writing a book like this. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm writing a snake book right now, and I ain't got to deal with hours of looking at microfilm, chasing down hard-to-reach people, deciphering lyrics, flights here and there. It's fucking
fun.
Crazy writing a book like this, man. You know?
Mm-hmm.
If you're, I don't know, are you guys as nostalgic for the early days of MTV as I am? I'm really into all that.
Very
stuff.
Much, man. Yeah, very much. Not as nostalgic for this as I am for the '70s.
Right.
You know, and you know that. I don't have to tell you. I mean, the '70s. My heart is with the '70s.
Sure.
Our age, man. Like I noticed that a lot of the people that we graduated with that are our age are all. It's all about the '80s. More people than. Not that would prefer the '80s over the '70s. I mean, if I could go back, man, I'm going back to 1976.
I agree.
Least,
I agree. Know? I'm with you.
I could go with that.
70s child, absolutely.
But those early days of MTV when they played music, when they played videos,
you know, not only
pre Thriller, pre Thriller MTV.
You had like the news, like you know, like bands were, you know, who was touring. I could always remember JJ. JJ always talking about
JJ Johnson, Johnston,
JJ Jackson.
JJ Jackson, that's it.
JJ Jackson was a big Van Halen fan, and you know, like when they were going to be touring, and you know, there was some cool shit out there. Mm-hmm.
Crew, yeah, Mark Goodman, yeah. The DJs, they must have saw some shit. I heard Mark
Alan
Goodman
Hunter,
wrote a real good book.
Martha
yeah,
Quinn. Now, JJ was the guy that was with Kiss when they came out and took their, you know, when they first went on television without their makeup. So that was JJ Jackson.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
right.
So that original crew was still in place in the summer of 83 when Kiss took the makeup
off.
Yeah,
it's still going strong in 83. Yeah, still going strong in 85, 86, you know. It really starts to taper off like the music.
87,
that's where MTV tapers off.
Once
maybe
they start getting
Guns
shows.
Guns N' Roses was still doing videos, so maybe like 89.
Yeah, once they got too showy. Well, let me make this point, man. A lot of these early bands at MTV, these one-hit wonders, Dexys Midnight Runners, Spandau Ballet, ABC.
Dozens of them.
Human League.
Thompson Twins.
Yeah, history regards these bands as like cheesy purveyors of 80s pop, one-hit wonders. But this book really makes a case that they're like actually like way more artistically serious, you know, than that. And they're constantly at war with their labels, you know. Take, for instance, the dude from Dexys Midnight Runners, man. This dude, Kevin Rowland, he had his smash, yeah, contrary to his yokel wearing suspenders, you know, his farm boy look. He was like behaved much like Dylan, really prickly and serious and really deeply concerned with musical sincerity and his art and shit.
And now he wears women's clothing.
Does he now?
Yeah.
I'm going to ask about that.
Odd.
Really?
He is an odd flat. He's a character.
I have no
man.
Idea what happened to that guy.
Yeah, he wears women's clothing, like lingerie. I saw a thing on might have been like VH1, like the one hit wonder type deal, and I was just blown away by that. I was like, what the fuck? And he's not even like a good looking guy, you know what I mean? I could say a guy's good looking or he's not. Well, this dude just does not look good in women's clothing.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
And speaking of them, that you bring them up, if there's one thing, I mean, in my own opinion, that the 80s have over the 70s is that the one-hit wonders were much better in the 80s than they were in the 70s.
Yeah, all right.
It was fun. They were fun. It was jumping around, and
I'll go to 80s dance night any night and have a time of my life.
There was drugs. There was, it was pre-AIDS.
Period of 81, 82 alone, man. You know, Tommy Two Tone, Aldo Nova, all that stuff. They were
stuff.
Just those one hit.
Aldo Nova Fantasy. Freaked out when I saw that.
Those videos. We were like 12 years old. We'd stay up to watch. Wait until
Headbangers Ball. Those videos came on.
Yeah,
that was my thing. Headbangers Ball. I used to videotape that fucking religiously every week.
Yeah, man. So, I don't know. I won't continue to talk about Dex. I was going to talk about it later, named after Dexedrine. Dex's Midnight Runners.
Is that where that came from?
This amphetamine drug and stuff I've never taken. It's like that. All right, three fun facts in the book, and I'm done.
Okay.
Talking about Rip It Up and Start Again, post-punk. Great book. Three fun facts. You guys know that the members of Devo were former hippies and were there at Kent State the day of the disaster.
Wow.
Members of Devo.
So was Chrissy Hynde.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Chris Hobbs there.
Yeah.
Interesting. A lot of people don't know that the band Joy Division got their name from sex slavery and at concentration camps. If you were a pretty young Jewish girl, you could be part of the Joy Division, which is probably horrible. Sex slaves.
You're going to sit in there and starve to death, or you're going to go out and service the Germans. That's pretty fucking
crazy. One part of the book that you would have liked, Mike, is really in-depth about the Talking Heads. Mm-hmm. And apparently, all the members of the Talking Heads, not named David Byrne, seriously blame Brian Eno for the breakup of the band.
Wow.
Yeah, because apparently him and David Byrne became like twins, like butt buddies, man. They went everywhere together, and they were like in love. And
right.
They really feel like the other members of the band really feel like the David Byrne took a powder on them, you know. Ran off with Brian Eno.
Plus, just the music wasn't as good. You know, as they got into the 80s and the 80s progressed, it just wasn't the same as Fear of Music. Like those first four or five albums.
Yeah.
Right up to Speaking in Tongues.
I also finished a book, Running with the Devil. I finally finished it.
How was that?
Very good
last
book.
Last time
man.
We talked, we were just getting into it.
There's some insight into the intertwining of Van Halen. And, you know, first and foremost, you know, you would think that like Eddie was like one of the bigger jerks in the band, and he really wasn't. Dave was an asshole, obviously. I mean, you look at him and know he's an asshole. But Alex was the one, man. Alex, like, pretty much, you know, the guy who wrote the book was their former stage manager and then went on to become their manager. And by the time he was getting ousted from the band, Alex was just a complete fucking jerk off. I mean, you know, showing up drunk everywhere. I mean, it's no secret that he's had a drinking problem. You know what blew me away is how much drugs this band did.
Alex was a nasty drunk, it sounds
like. Oh, God, yeah.
Did Alex have a problem where it started getting into where Eddie was getting all of the attention
That was more Dave's issue.
It wasn't Alex.
No, it really wasn't Alex. Alex and Eddie.
Because it seems that when he was on, I listened to an interview with that guy, and he got into a little bit about Alex. I'm not sure what I don't remember what he said, but okay, go ahead.
I didn't get that from the book at all.
Yeah,
they still stuck together through thick and thin, whereas Alex had the balls enough to say something. Eddie really didn't.
Yeah.
He just kind of buried his head in the sand, more or less, which is, I guess, the genius in him. I guess I don't know what it, whatever you call it, you call it. And at that point, Michael Anthony, I didn't realize this. They fucking screwed him, man. They went in later. Excuse me. Renegotiated his deal, took him out of all future publishing from Van Halen, and he was just basically a session guy. That's what they did to Michael Anthony.
Wow.
They really fucked that dude over bad. And he just stuck around. He was mad.
That was later on? Was that when?
I think 84 was already out, if I'm remembering. 84.
So that kind of shit was going down that early?
Yeah. And Dave's EP, he basically sat down on an airplane with this guy or on a bus with this guy and said, hey, I got something for you to hear, and played it for him, and he was horrified. He was like, what the fuck is this? But he's the manager So he's not only managing Van Halen, he's going to have to manage parts of them if they decide to go that route. But he hated it, and then obviously the rest is history. He releases the coconut, whatever the fuck it was called. I don't even remember the EP. It had four songs on it with the Louis Prima, Just the Gigolo, and then California Girls. But he played California Girls for him.
That's it started as an EP?
It was an EP. It was a four-song
EP.
Crazy from the Heat.
That's exactly what it is. Oh, that's not a full-length LP? No. Crazy from the Heat? No. Oh, you got to do that.
Four songs.
That album didn't come out. His album didn't come out until like 16, 17 months later.
Eat Him Up and Eat Him and Smile.
Early 85 was Crazy from the Heat. Eat Him and Smile was Summer of 86.
Like
a month or two after 5150.
That's right.
Yeah.
A couple of the other cool things were that their writing process was Eddie just like kind of locked in a room, basically coming up with the music, and here comes Dave just strutting in and instantly just lays down lyrics, and that's the way it worked. It was just fire, a dynamite in a box just waiting to just explode, and that's how they got by on those first three albums. I mean, it's funny because Fair Warning, even the guy disses that record, and that happens to be probably our three favorite album. I know it's my favorite album by the band. Most
hardcore Van Halen fans, usually the consensus is that Fair Warning is their best album.
What else did I have to come up with that? Dave being more of a jerk off than Eddie. But the other thing was Bill O'Coin, which will lead right into what our topic is tonight. What happened was Van Halen signed a really bad, really, really bad record deal to where Warner Brothers was going to just fucking own them for like ever. And they were hot right out of the box. They were drawing major crowds in the LA and the California party scene. That's what they were. And they were hot. And Warner Brothers calls this dude. He had toured with the Sex Pistols too and survived it in the United States, that one small tour that they did, and got them through it alive or whatever.
About O'Coin still?
No. This is Noel.
Who?
Noel Monk. So he survived that tour, and the executives at Warner's were like, look, we got this band, and we got them on the cheap. We want you to go out with them. And that's how he became their tour manager. And that first tour, they were with Journey and somebody else, but they just immediately started blowing bands off the stage.
Right.
So, but they signed him for like pennies. So he comes up with this plan. At the end of that tour, they want to leave. They want to get out of under the management that they're under because the guy's just not showing up to shows. He's just being a real jerk. I got to really speed this along. I apologize for being long-winded. He comes up with this plan to make Warner Brothers miss and their attorneys miss this clause in their contract that's going to void it, and it worked.
Found a loophole?
Yeah, there was a fucking loophole in the contract that they fucking found, and they created enough chaos for them to overlook it. And he details it beautifully in the book, the way he went in there and sat down. He was friends with some of these people at Warner Brothers. When he went and sat down with them, that you could just see he was like, get the fuck out of my office. I want to like kill you. Because now Van Halen could renegotiate a deal. So Van Halen says, we want you to be our manager. He says, I've never managed a band. Why don't you go look around? You know, this, that, the other thing. So, everybody knows famously that, perhaps Gene Simmons found Van Halen. I mean, he did help them record their demo and stuff. So they went to O'Coin, and from the way he heard it in the book, Bill O'Coin just totally ignored them the entire time they were in his office. He was just too busy doing this, opening letters, reading mail, just fucking around,
doing coke,
and didn't want nothing to do with them. And that's the story that he told, and I was just really blown away by that. Now I don't know if O'Coin did that because he felt the pressure from them because they were so fucking hot. And Kiss by that point was, maybe on the tail side already. I mean, Kiss had done what they were going to do.
They were already the biggest band in the world. Yeah,
and they had done what they were going to do. And Van Halen was on the other, on that other incline, and they were ready to conquer the fucking world. And they did. I mean, the tour with Black Sabbath, they blew Black Sabbath off the stage every night. And Black Sabbath partied hard with those guys, from what this dude said, man. This Noel Monk, got them involved in fucking merchandising. They were beating guys up in the parking lots of concerts because of the fucking, some dude was selling a $10 Van Halen t-shirt, and they were beating the shit out of these guys and collecting all that stuff and donating it to the cops in the city they were playing. Everything that dude had, they took all the shit from him, donated the shirts, donated the money to the cops. So he had like all these ins with all these. It's just a great book. Highly recommend this book.
I can't speak to Bill O'Coin's involvement, but what I did hear from what, he said in an interview shortly before he died was that he regretted not taking them on. And, he said it was he himself who fucked up. Yeah, by bringing them to New York instead of leaving them out on their own turf on the West Coast, man, where it became a fucking disaster in New York City. And that was that. And it was just kind of... And Eddie reminded him all the time, like every time he saw Bill, you know, you guys didn't... You didn't sign, you know, you didn't want anything to do with Van Halen, just to kind of taunting him, you know? And so, and Bill, too, you know, Bill O'Coyne knew that, man. You know, he... That was one of his... Big fuck ups.
Fist fights. They talk about Alex and Eddie getting into just fucking blood beating the shit out of each other in a hotel room. Yeah. Just really cool book.
It's crazy how many of these bands punch each other and fight. They never punched each other, man. These guys are crazy. A lot of them.
They were brothers.
Charlie Watts punching Mick Jagger. They all did that shit. They were crazy brothers.
That adds a whole other fucking element to it.
Ace Frehley punched someone once.
I saw a dude from Kix get the shit kicked out of him. Eddie, the rhythm guitar player, was bitching about the sound. He had a hot mic, I guess, and he went to sing backups and it zapped him a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
So he's complaining to the monitor guy. This is at Club Binet. He's complaining to the monitor guy and he starts complaining again. The solo's going on. He walks to the side of the stage to give the guy shit and kind of pushes him. The fucking dude just, I saw the whole thing. The dude just goes, bam, lays him fucking out, breaks his nose right there. They canceled the show, the whole fucking nine yards. Craziest thing I ever saw.
It's heavy metal, baby.
Yeah. So that's the nutshell. I really wanted to bring up the O'Coyne stuff because that's going to lead right into what we're going into.
Were the first couple Van Halen albums were on Warner Brothers, right?
Oh, all of them were.
Yeah.
So they
renegotiated their contract with Warner Brothers.
Yes, yeah. They did.
Yeah.
You know, and they got paid handsomely for it. I got to look back because I have said in the past that 84 didn't go number one. But I think it had a number one single on it. I don't think it actually hit number one. And I'll look that up and bring it up at a later time. I don't want to continue on the whole Van Halen thing. It's not the show tonight.
But yeah, I know one of them hit number one and the other did. I don't know if it was the album or the single.
I think it was the single for Jump. I don't think the record hit number one. They don't mention it in the book. They briefly mentioned that Eddie went off and played on Michael's record and, you know, was thrilled about it and stuff like that. They did, you know, it was
pun intended?
Yeah. I was upset that they didn't that he didn't mention the you know, and we'll get into it later, I'm sure, that about Eddie possibly joining Kiss. He called him Edward.
Yeah, that's
he called him Edward throughout the book too. He never once called him Eddie. He called him Edward and David. Occasionally he'd say Dave, but Alex was a real prick, is what they're saying.
Kiss fans, I just want to remind you that you're not going to learn anything about Kiss from this podcast. There's nothing that hasn't been discussed a million times. We are just three more Kiss fans
I have a little nugget I'm hoping somebody
I have a
know.
Few ideas that, you know, I could toss out that maybe hasn't been, you know, thrown into the, you know, discussion pit throughout Kiss world. But, you know, that's kind of later on when the time comes. I'll throw those ideas out.
I want to establish our Kiss roots, like where we come from.
I guess we can start with that and work chronologically.
I like telling your story for you. Mike is in a local Two Guys, what have you, there to ostensibly get Destroyer or something like that. When the guy working there opens up a box and says, why don't you get the new one? And pulls out Love Gun, brand new.
Let's reverse
so
that,
we're
though.
Pre-Love Gun. That's where we come from. Our roots are pre-Love Gun. We go
that
far back.
Like a lot of people, I don't know too many people, even in, you know, and Kiss is the most heavily podcasted band.
Why? That blows my mind.
Because people like us love to talk about Kiss. But it's just, it never gets old.
Everybody feels like they know
we have been locked in the same dialogue since we were 6 years old, and we are now all 47. And it hasn't gotten old. It hasn't gotten stale.
But
you know, it's,
why is Kiss different than every other? The Beatles, Pink Floyd, Zeppelin, anybody else?
Because Kiss is Kiss.
Why aren't there 100 Led Zeppelin podcasts?
I think we always had. I think we always had.
They're no less popular.
I think we always had to defend Kiss and why we like them. My opinion on it.
Oh yeah, that's for sure.
We all had to go through childhood.
You never had to defend your liking of Led
Zeppelin. Getting into fights over Kiss.
That's for sure. That's for sure.
And that's a common thread between us and everybody else out there that's our age that knows what it was like to grow up in the 70s and, you know, be told your band sucks.
Yeah,
every time you wore the shirt, if you went to school, whatever it was.
It was hardest in the 80s, man.
Sucks.
The Animalize, Asylum, Crazy Nights years in high school where those were you were alone. You were an isolated man. No one liked Kiss and you were a fag.
Those years, man,
for liking
in high
men.
School when it got to Animalize, and suddenly everybody was on the bandwagon for this brand new band called Kiss, and their second album, Animalize.
Weren't many in my high school, man.
That pissed me off far more than going through the 70s and being told Kiss sucks. Believe it or not, man, I was more pissed off in 84, 85 at the bandwagon fans that just came on board with Animalize and Asylum that actually thought that Kiss was a new band.
Did you really find there were that many kids in high school that were into the new Kiss, though?
People that were
new
not,
as in 85,
people that
86.
Were, I mean, we were precocious in the sense that we were listening to rock and roll when we were 5 and 6 years old. And other kids our age, most kids our age, were watching Sesame Street and bringing Muppet records to school.
Yeah.
You know, and we were bringing rock and roll over to music class in sixth grade.
Us and a couple other guys,
You know, I remember the music teacher in, you know, it was in the sixth grade, fucking first grade, 76.
I brought the 45 for the 45 for rock and roll.
You know, the man, the music teacher,
like, are you
saying,
crazy?
You know, are you, yeah. Do your parents know that you have this record? And I said, yeah, they bought it for me.
They got it for me, right?
Yeah. But
jumping around on my fucking bed while the little record player's playing those 45s.
Yeah.
Fucking insane.
No, our music teacher wouldn't play Kiss.
But I remember going into, and I'll name drop Eric, who was in episode 29 a few weeks ago. We went into his older sister's bedroom, and we saw she had basically constructed a poster, a square poster out of the four cutouts, four pages from the Kiss booklet that came with Alive.
Mm-hmm.
So it was all individual members put into a square poster, you know, that she had taped together. And we just kind of like laughed at it. But it was kind of like fake laughter, like nervous laughter, like, what is that? You know, you didn't want to admit that it was cool. So we were kind of like, ah, look at them. You know, they got long hair. They're wearing, like, paint. They're wearing, you know, they look like girls. They look like scary, ugly girls. And then it just my eyes kind of went down to Ace, who's got the Les Paul, and he's just
looking at scary-looking girls.
You know, just the puckered lips on Paul, the whole thing. Just everything about it screamed a certain fuck you to everything that was considered safe and good and right.
And you found out you liked that.
And our parents were horrified over it.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got
quickly, your parents worse than mine.
I
didn't like them. Your parents worse than mine.
Yeah. So for months, I would see these pictures, and then I would, you know, I would see the records in the store, and then finally I talked my parents into buying me a record.
Mm-hmm.
I remember wanting Alive or Destroyer, but we got Rock and Roll Over because it was the new album at the time.
Right. You had Rock and Roll Over, I had Hotter Than Hell.
Yeah, and you quickly got Hotter Than Hell,
yeah.
And then, but you quickly surpassed me, and you went and got everything up until Rock and Roll Over, like really quickly.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
Then I got Love Gun, because Love Gun, like I said, I went to two guys, and meaning to buy Destroyer, and they were literally unboxing Love Gun,
mm-hmm.
setting up a display, like an end cap display of Love Gun.
Yeah.
And my father was like, this is the new one. Why don't you get the new one?
Heck yeah.
Yeah, it really speaks to its times, because I can't imagine a father today buying a seven-year-old an album called Love Gun.
Well, true. All the sexual metaphors are lost on you until later in life, man. I mean, hey, Rocket Ride was just about riding in a rocket until you were older, and you
take
like, hey,
me. You know, I mean, the second song on Rock and Roll
Over. Sucking
somebody's
dick or something. You know, hey, that shit when you were young, yeah.
I used to go around in first and second grade singing "Take Me," running up to girls, put your hand in my pocket, grab onto my rocket. Not knowing what the fuck he was really saying.
There's literally like our
I just thought I was cool.
Uh-huh, like a rocket in your pants.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the girls didn't like that. Not because they knew what it meant, but just because they thought I was an asshole who liked Kiss and, you know.
Kiss, our genius of misogyny. You know, just look at the Love Gun cover. You know, all the beauty swooning over the guys in the band. Their muscles are so exaggerated. Peter was never that ripped in his life on the Love Gun cover. All of them, you know. It's all about the dominance of man over woman. Kiss does it very, very well.
Yeah. Pat, what was your first experience with Kiss? Like, do you have like a first memory of discovering them, or the first time your first encounter with
Ace
Kiss?
On that album cover with that, you know, on that live record, he's fucking got his guitar just fucking screaming up, and that's my first memory of it, and I was like, whoa, what is that? And I might have been flipping through like my uncle's records or something, and that's where I saw it.
Alive, right?
Yeah, the Alive album cover. I remember it was that one. Bat Out of Hell was another one. I was like, oh, what's going on?
Yeah,
that was a badass album cover too.
Great,
yeah, there were
great
things that you started realizing. I was like, oh, there's different things out there than fucking Sonny and Cher. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, Bat Out of Hell was right.
Well,
there.
I remember the summer of 77, the two records I got that year, that you know, during that summer, between first and second grade, was Love Gun and the first Sean Cassidy record.
Yeah.
So that's where my musical spectrum. So it was, I guess Sean Cassidy was the Justin Bieber of the 70s. I was still a little kid, but I was kind of evolving into stuff that would inform my future, saying this is fucking real rock and roll. This is badass. This is where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in 6 years, you'll be playing an electric guitar.
It's definitely the Alive record. I'm sitting here thinking about it, and I can remember flipping through those fucking albums. Uncle Eric, if you're out there listening.
The first Alive.
Yeah.
I think we talked about that once before. That's certainly the album that broke it for them. There's something about that cover, man. Like,
it's iconic. Just seeing Ace in that fucking and that's obviously the guy I was drawn to. I'm not a guitar player.
I was drawn to Ace. I'm an Ace
guy.
But you're just
drawn in by him. I don't know if they did that strategically or it was just part of the live show, whatever. But he's literally in the front of everybody else and just fucking sucks you right into the record.
Yeah.
You want to have an interesting Kiss convo talking about the back of Kiss Alive. Talk about that audience, which does not look like a Kiss audience. Yeah, they got those four dudes holding up the Kiss sign. But it's noteworthy that not a single person in the crowd in that picture has on any Kiss makeup at all. They look like they're there for like Emerson, Lake, and Palmer or something, those guys.
At the time.
A little weird.
You got to remember that at the time, it wasn't a circus yet.
Right.
It was before Rock and Roll All Night became a hit. Dressed to Kill was like 2 months old.
It was before the Coliforms and the Dolls.
You know, it was amazing that they were even playing in a venue of that size in May of 1975 because the rest of the shows weren't, you know, the venues weren't that big. So Cobo Hall is pretty amazing that they were able to play that size venue in such a short period of time. I think audience-wise, you didn't see a lot of people with the makeup just yet.
Getting past the makeup thing, the stereotypes of, because I do understand what you're saying. I mean, you look at that, if you were to take that crowd now, like a Slipknot show or something, there's going to be fucking earrings and lip piercings and all kinds of crazy shit going on. Society has definitely changed.
People didn't realize, man. I mean, that was still the stoner 70s, It's just kind of, you know, you can't tell that audience apart from a Styx audience or a Ted Nugent audience.
Last week I saw the Eagles, now I'm going to see this band called
Bob
Kiss.
Bob Seger. Mm. Yeah. You know, and there's been speculation that was not actually a Kiss audience. I don't think too much about that, man. It's neither here nor there, man. I mean, iconic album, man. I was sweating that fucking album for 2 years before I actually got it.
I don't remember when I owned it.
I mean, he had Alive, like, right, I guess, at the beginning of 77 when I had gotten...
I got it much later
Rock and Roll Over.
I got it much later than that.
He got all the albums very quickly, and then I would get one. It was kind of spotty the way I got them. I'd get like one every couple months, you know, where I would beg my parents to buy me a new one. And it just seems like every time I went out to buy Destroyer, I never got it. I always ended up getting I went to get Destroyer. Love Gun was new, so I got Love Gun. Went to get Destroyer again, and for whatever reason, my father was always like intervening. He was like, "Why don't you get this one? Why don't you get this one?" And we ended up getting a debut album instead.
Yeah,
you know, again, went to get Destroyer. We got double platinum a year later. So it was just funny that I never actually had a copy of Destroyer on vinyl until like much later.
Just a weird coincidence, man. Like we mentioned before, like we mentioned in the past episode, Alive 1 was a double record. It probably cost my or dad $5 or $6 more dollars, and they didn't want to spring for it. Therefore, you didn't get Kiss Alive until Christmas.
I remember your dad yelling because he had all of the, we had Hotter Than Hell, Dressed to Kill, and the first album in his hand, and he had Alive.
Yeah.
He's like, look at this. What a ripoff. They all have the same songs. Got to Choose here, Got to Choose there. Parasite here, Parasite there. Cold Gin, I'll give you a Cold Gin. You know, and it was just basically like, this is, you're being ripped off. It's the same songs.
Yeah, why pay for the, you know, you're paying for the live version and a studio version?
But our parents grew up.
Their whole thing, though, their live show. I mean, live shows started taking a turn. And like you were getting ready to say something about your parents.
Yeah.
You weren't going to see fucking, I don't know, the Spinners because of their fucking stage presence. You were going to hear those guys sing. You were going to a fucking Kiss concert because it was like going to the goddamn Rock and Roll Olympics.
Yeah. But our parents grew up in the singles era, so they didn't understand the concept of a live album, let alone the concept of an album itself. Everything they had a lot of singles, a lot of 45s.
They didn't understand the concept of sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yeah.
And all that depravity.
There was still some wholesomeness to
that. Yeah,
there was
some wholesomeness. You know? Your parents...
My father did have a lot of albums. He was into... At the time, he was into Boston, ELO, Bruce, Fleetwood Mac.
Still a conservative guy.
My mother was listening to a lot of Motown. So we had a lot of Motown on vinyl.
We had a lot of Temptations. I know you're
Four
a big Tops,
Temptations, Smokey, Marvin Gaye, Diana Ross, all that, Stevie Wonder. But, you know, like, it's no secret. I've discussed it here. My dad was more into, like, that classic rock stuff and started getting me that. And my uncle, which is his brother, is, like I said, where I found that, you know, those records. And was like, whoa. My uncle was he is a trip, man. He used to call me and my brother in his room and let's beat the shit out of each other. And they'd be like, what the fuck are you doing in there?
So, you know, 77 goes into 78. At that point, you know, Kiss is by far the biggest thing on the planet. And we're getting a lot of shit in school, constantly defending Kiss. Sometimes 78, into 78, you know, the bubblegum cards come out.
I took a lot more shit in the 80s. I'm sorry. I don't remember a lot of shit in the 70s. I remember a lot of people,
a lot of kids
agreeing with
70s,
us and being with us.
No, well, I agree with Stick on this one, man. The shit that I took in the 80s.
In the 80s,
you're going
to
see fucking Kiss? What are you, retarded? I was like, it's fucking Kiss.
Yeah.
It's still Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons and fucking Ivan Mutt.
But I remember like third grade, you know, third grade for us was 78. So that was the year, you know, there was no studio album, but, the solo albums come out. Double Platinum comes out. The Dolls come out. All of the merchandising
starts coming out
in 78, man. Every other week,
thanks,
it was like,
Gene,
we want this. I want to be, you know, Gene. I was Gene Simmons for Halloween.
Yeah, you were.
You know, the Halloween costume.
The fucking plastic mask over your face. Surprised that any of us are still alive.
I had a period in my life where I collected all that shit.
That goes around your ears. I hated that.
I had all the merch, man. My God, I sold all that stuff.
We did the conventions. They probably like the first five or six conventions.
We went to the first Abacus convention in Boston. You probably remember the date.
If I don't remember the exact date. I am one of the people that have superior autobiographical memory. Look it up, Google it. I'm not going to get into it, but not tonight. No, but it was March 20 something, 1987. March 21st, 22nd. It could have been the 24th. It was a Sunday. It was a Sunday. It was in Boston at a Holiday Inn.
Drove to Boston.
We drove there at 5 in the morning to get there on time.
Yeah, we did.
Besides getting our stuff from Kiss conventions, we would go to US 1 Flea Market and see Gene. I forgot his last name. And this guy, we used to order from this guy named Al Odom.
Al Odom.
I don't know whatever happened to Al Odom. Al Odom, if you're out there,
Kiss
I don't
Classics
know. Kiss people, if you remember Al Odom, give us a shout out. He was just this mysterious name that we used to order tapes from. So yeah, you know, I mean, then we get into like, you know, the solo albums. What were your thoughts on the solo albums at that point? Were you still thinking like?
We've said this before, and I'm going to say that this Kiss solo albums in '78 are one of the most unique and daring things ever done in rock and roll fucking history.
Yeah.
What a daring idea.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? Find me a person that disagrees with this. Everybody either thinks the best one is Paul's or Ace's.
Yeah.
Can't find a single human being that thinks one of the best two is Peter's or Gene's. And everybody thinks the third and fourth best are either Peter or Gene. One or the other. Show me a single person who thinks the best one is Pete's or Gene's.
There's got to be people
out there.
I'm sure there are people out there.
Either Paul and
Ace,
the one and two, or Gene and Paul, three and four. I'll say this, though.
Graphically, the album cover for Gene had that little hint of red, that little triplet of blood.
They're all iconic.
Iconic. But I could look at the Gene one for fucking hours and just be like haunted by it. You know what I mean?
That's
my favorite is Paul's.
Mine too. Gun to the head. Mine too.
Ace a close.
Ace close.
Very
second for me, man.
Very close second.
I agree.
For me.
Yep.
And I'm an Ace guy, man. You know, Ace is my favorite member. Ace is the one that made me want to pick up a guitar. You know, he just exudes everything rock and roll, man. He's just cool. He's by far the coolest. He's cool in the sense of like Keith Richards, Iggy Pop, Tom Waits. He's just badass, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he transcends the mold of Kiss, you know, and he just,
thank God he's there. Thank God he's there. Yeah.
But my favorite album was Paul's.
I don't know if this is true about Ace, but this is one of my little nuggets I want to throw out there. That obviously the faces are all copywritten and Gene and Paul own that.
Right.
But Ace gets paid for his from Gene and Paul for them to lease that image.
Really?
I read that. I could pull it up right now.
Okay, pull it up.
I'm wondering if it's true right here. The four original makeup designs have been registered with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office with ownership and licensing rights held by Simmons and Stanley. The Spaceman makeup design is leased to Simmons and Stanley by Ace Frehley.
Really?
Okay.
Damn.
No, I know Paul. I know Ace and Peter no longer own their makeup.
So then maybe he sold it back out?
Unless he's getting paid
now with them touring with that makeup. Yeah. He's getting a piece of that.
Yeah. These are the things that I really don't pay attention to. I mean, Kiss
any
fans.
Any listeners who know that for a fact, yeah, chime in on that on
Kiss
the
Kiss fans
on
are
the
at war over these things. And,
yeah,
you know,
sure,
there are facts out there.
That's
you know?
Why I wanted
there
to
are
bring
facts
that up.
And there are the facts that are always presented within Kiss World, you know, as far as like, I mean, there's, like I said, there's 2 dozen podcasts out there. A few of them are really good.
Yeah.
And a few of them have addressed this extensively.
Yeah, I find that one. Yeah. I find that point really interesting if that's the case. Because they're touring now. And if he's still getting paid. He's getting paid for not doing anything. Good for him.
Yeah,
seriously,
so if there's
great.
Anybody that can
that's
settle
awesome.
That with what's going on with Ace's makeup.
You should love Tommy Fair, then. Keep going, Tommy.
Keep playing,
keep
son.
I want to say this about the solo albums. The Gene Simmons solo album does not suck.
I love
the
Gene Simmons
solo album.
Yeah,
Gene Simmons solo album is good.
Yeah.
Burning Up a Fever. Love it. Tunnel of Love. Love it. Always Knew You Know Where to Hide. Love it.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm even changing position. You know what? I don't like the Peter album. But stop knocking the guy for releasing and having the balls to release music that he liked, man.
It was
you
the
know,
ballsiest
his
move.
Jazz.
It was definitely the ballsiest move out of the four of them.
Whatever the thing is that he's into, that's the kind of sugar Papa likes. God bless you, bro. You had the balls to put it out at least. So leave him the fuck alone. Leave the cat man alone. I'm still into Kiss at the solo albums. Kiss Alive 2 comes out. Still very much in. I want to hear the other side of Side 4. Take those songs
Alive 2 was a year before that, but it just seemed like every Christmas, every fucking Christmas, there was like a new Kiss, something that came out, like, you know, Alive 2 followed by the next year we got the solo albums for Christmas. You know, we didn't get the solo albums when they first came out. At least I didn't.
No.
You know, they were released, I think, in the end of September, and you know, I waited.
It
was because I was 8 years old, you know. We were 8. So I don't know if you made your mom go out to the store.
My memory of back in the day is I got Peter and Paul and you got Ace and Gene. Ain't that how it went?
That's how it went. Originally,
And we just swapped.
Yeah. And I was Gene for Halloween and you were Paul.
Yeah.
And I had the Ace doll and you had, you had all of the dolls.
I'd like to see those pictures of you guys on Halloween.
Yeah, I wish some existed, man.
Nothing exists. So.
Later on, we would paint ourselves
up as Kiss
and just do Kiss concerts.
Yeah. We would just do
Kiss concerts in his bedroom, and we would put the bed all the way into the corner and use it as a platform and jump off the bed. And we'd go to Spencer's, and he had all of the strobe lights and every light that Spencer's had, he had in his room. We're 10, 8, 9, 10, 11 years old doing this stuff, you know, incense for smoke, you know.
Yeah.
Or back at the time, they were called punks.
Yeah. Chime in on the webpage, either on our webpage or our Facebook page. I'd really like to know that about the Spaceman's image.
I don't know how chronological you're looking to approach this thing. Are you looking to approach it?
I'm kind of looking to go a little chronologically, man, and go through.
You finish
through the 70s, 80s.
Right.
Why? What do you want to jump? You want to jump ahead to something? I don't care. I'm all good, man.
I'm just enjoying free fall because we're not really going chronologically. I like the free
fall. But I'm just, you know, as we kind of get off of a subject, I'll be like, okay, next up was this, next up was that.
Let me ask you this because I got off the boat in like 1980. For whatever reason, I was into Rush and Priest. I guess I was just into other bands, and I lost interest in Kiss.
A lot of people did, man.
I lost interest in Kiss for a couple of years.
Yeah.
I stuck through Animal Eyes. I was listening to Animal Eyes. I liked Animal Eyes.
Yeah.
It was a different Kiss record.
I guess it shows our age.
Like you said, I got hated on for listening to it. You know?
Yeah.
I guess if you ask people that are in their early 50s as opposed to us, again, we're 47. The three of us are 47. So, you know, that'll give Kiss fans out there an idea of where our approach is coming from. I guess if you have 5 years on us and you experienced Dynasty as a new album, you may have been among those that said, what is this shit?
Mm.
Kiss is releasing a disco song?
Mm.
What is this? What is Dirty Living? What is Sure Know Something? What is this? It's all melodic. You can dance to it, like they say on American Bandstand. But I mean, to us, it was just the new Kiss album, and it was great, and I loved it. I don't know. I
liked the Gene and the Ace songs a lot, and later on, I would learn to love the Paul songs, but yeah.
And again, yeah. I'm a Paul and Ace guy, you know, if I have to, you know, I mean, you know, Gene, I mean, he doesn't says a lot of very uncool things, but Gene was still writing great songs. I love Gene's Dynasty songs, X-Ray Eyes, Charisma, just good stuff, man. Good songs, good catchy stuff.
Interesting that there's more Ace songs than Gene bigger. Songs on Dynasty.
Well, yeah, Dynasty is where, I mean, look, once the solo albums come out and Ace has by far the most successful, and he has the hit song and back, you know, in New York Groove.
That's a cover, though, right? Isn't that a cover song?
Yeah, cover. Surprisingly, and again, like as we got older, we found out that a lot certain things that were cover songs, King of the Nighttime World. Yeah. When I found out that King of the Nighttime World was not actually a Kiss song, it was like being told, you know, being 5 years old and being told that there's no Santa Claus.
I'm still in denial about that. I don't want to hear it. What are you saying?
Sledgehammer or something.
Larry did not hear what you just said. I have no memory of what was said.
Stick's got his hands over his ears.
Yeah, you know, by Dynasty, and I often think of the way, I like to think about Kiss in terms of comparing them to other bands. And if Kiss is the Beatles, Dynasty is their White Album. And the reason Dynasty is their White Album is because that's the album where Kiss and the Beatles started writing for themselves, as opposed to writing for Kiss. They were writing, you know, it was basically a competition for album space.
Yeah, it's fighting to see who's going to get on the record.
Got
and
the
where.
Big hit song on the solo album, so now he has three fucking songs on an album as opposed to one.
Yeah,
or zero. You know, 2 years before he had, you know, it was. And they were really, I guess they were maybe in competition for space, maybe quietly, you know, just kind of, they were just writing for themselves at that point.
You also had to factor in alcohol and drugs.
They're all writing with other writers. Yeah. Speaking of Dynasty, you can't mention it without saying that could be Peter's best song right there, Dirty Living.
Dirty Living is my favorite Peter song.
It's up there.
Yeah. Very underrated Kiss song is Dirty Living. Unmasked comes out a year later. Now, this is where I didn't know Unmasked was out. I was kind of lost with that. The summer of 1980, I'm at St. Rocco's Feast in Elizabeth, New Jersey. And we're walking and we're doing, you know, you shoot the water out of the gun into the clown mouth and blow up the balloon and you try to win a prize and, you know. And I remember seeing Kiss Unmasked up there.
It's a great prize.
And I'm thinking, like, what is that?
Freaking stuffed animal.
Unmasked. Anything to say about Unmasked? Was it? Or I mean, were you?
I love the poster in it.
Yeah, I love the poster in it too. You know, no, you know what I gotta say?
Stuff like that. I fucking love it. It's just like really good.
It took me till like 1988 to get into Unmasked because, like I said, I bailed on Kiss. And I went back, and I gotta say, Unmasked is one of the guiltiest pleasures of my musical life. I adore it from top to bottom, and it's such a cheesy record, man. Yeah. I love it.
It's cheesy, but it's great cheesy, man. Yeah. If you know any of those songs, like if Britney Spears, I used to think like if like Britney Spears or Justin Bieber covered those songs, they would be monstrous hits. Any of them, man.
Seems that way.
If Justin Bieber put out Easy As It Seems, man, you know, and I'm gonna get crucified for this. There are people right now rolling their eyes, want to hammer me about
Justin
this.
Bieber
but I'm just
show.
Saying that, you know, as far as like. And I did name drop Justin Bieber twice in this, man.
That's three times.
That's three
Fuck
times.
Him.
All right. Fucking give me somebody who's big right now. Give me somebody who's big right now. I don't know. I don't fucking know who's
Katy
big right
Perry
now.
Katy Perry could do those songs
if
justice.
If Katy Perry did Easy As It Seems, that would be fucking huge.
It would. It really would.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow is the life.
What makes the world go round?
This is pure pop. Why is it not a hit?
Masterful. But you know what? A lot of Kiss fans say, well, if it was remixed, if it had ballsier guitars.
No.
I don't care if you could jack the fucking distortion
Stop
up on them and
the
give it all the fucking big
Doesn't
drums you want.
Here.
I'm sorry. Those songs are pop songs. I don't care how dirty you make them. They're still pop songs.
I don't think
and
you
they're still commercial.
Have to make them dirty. But there's something to be said with something that's reproduced and brought to another engineer's ears that can pop, make something pop a little bit more.
I just thought the drums were the problem. I think the drums are the problem on Unmasked.
And another producer on that or a guy who gets
those
a hold
of those
tracks.
Those are the Anton Fig drums.
Well, the sound of the drums, you know, the sound of the
By
drums.
By that point, there were different guys playing on those records, man. That's... That's no secret.
Carmine Appice, man. He's on it.
I heard on Sirius on the 70s
Vinny even
channel.
Like, floating around probably, yeah, right? Yeah, I know, yeah. Writing, but from a writing standpoint, Vinny was, I don't know if he was on that record or not. I would have to look.
No, Vinny is a few years ahead.
He wrote nothing on that, or even not even a whisper? Okay.
Are you talking about Vinny Ponzi or Vinny Vincent?
Vincent.
No, right? Vincent's a few years away. But I heard the Bay City Rollers, Do You Believe in Magic? No, You Made Me Believe in Magic.
Right.
And I was listening to that. I was listening to the drums. I was like, this sounds very Unmasked. And I was listening to some of the vocal melodies and the verses. And I was like, this is the fucking template for Unmasked. Like, anybody out there listening, go to find the Bay City Rollers, You Made Me Believe in Magic. Listen to that. That's the template for Unmasked. Kiss will never admit that. Gene and Paul will never admit that. But I say it's true, so it's true. That's the template for Unmasked. Everything happening in that song, the production values, the sound, the tone in the instruments, certain little melodies. Yeah. That's my imaginary template for Unmasked.
It's a song or an album?
It's a song.
It's a song.
Yeah. I kind of say that tongue in cheek, man. You know, but
I got to hear that now.
Make of that what you will.
You know what? They did a car. The solo albums were a daring thing. We'll give them credit for that. I also would like to point out, and I got a lot of bad things to say about it, because there's another good one, man. the stylistic shift between Unmasked to The Elder to Creatures of the Night. Is there any other band that's changed stylistically so dramatically from one record to another in such a short amount of time? I think not.
You can even go further. You can even go further than that and not have to stop there. You can go with the span of maybe 8 years, 9 years. You really can, because you're right. Every one of those records was completely different. I mean, arguably so, but they're all completely different. I mean, it could be a different band recording those records through the course of 8 to 10 years. It really could. That's a great observation, Stick. Yeah. Absolutely.
Of course.
Just going through an identity crisis for about 5 years.
Yeah, and it doesn't help.
But music in general, I didn't mean to cut you off, Stick, but music in general, where was it going at that point? You know, what did they, you know, they achieved such fucking monumental success. What do we do now?
And then it was all downhill because they had lost so much. They totally lost popularity within a year between 79 and 80 in the States. So Unmasked, they toured Australia. They didn't even bother touring the States in 1980.
And it gets even worse in the coming years. Creatures tour was...
The Elder. They put out The Elder because at that point they were like, okay, let's get serious. We want to kind of go for some sort of credibility and validity as artists. So they kind of got Bob Ezrin and they went with this whole concept album idea.
The man who almost ruined Metallica,
and
Bob
Ezrin.
No, that wasn't Ezra. Never mind. I'm thinking somebody else.
As soon as it's released, Paul is thinking, like, what did we just fucking do? Like, what did we do? You know, he saw the album cover hanging in. I think he said he was on West 8th Street, and it must have been Revolver Records or one of those. It's Only Rock and Roll, maybe. And he said he saw the album in the window, and he just said, what the fuck did we do?
This is The Elder.
This is Paul Stanley's reaction to first seeing The Elder,
but you know what?
In public.
All right, this is why Paul Stanley's a big wussy.
I love The Elder.
Like, why can't Paul stand by it? Yeah, we made The fucking Elder, man.
Because,
like, we like it.
Because
as soon as he heard a lot of negative feedback, the Kiss fans are right. It sucks.
Because it seems to me that Paul and Gene have, to a fault, tried to micromanage Kiss's image, their public image.
I can't even listen to Paul Stanley talk
the way
because it's nothing but canned party line answers for the last goddamn 30 years.
Yeah, it's the same canned answers for their entire, they're saying the same things now that they were saying in the 70s.
Still, I follow him on Twitter and he still is that way with anything and everything he says about anything. I mean, it could be what's going on in the world. It could be about what he just fucking cooked for dinner.
Yeah.
He's very politically correct and cautious about what he says because the Kiss name is attached to it.
Right.
He's gotten bitchy in his old age. He attacks
he's
back.
He's more
now,
honest
man.
Now.
He
now
used
he's
to be
more
chill.
Honest.
Now he attack. He'll go on the attack.
Yeah.
But he's still
because
cautious
he's
about it.
Watched Gene over the better part of the last two decades tarnish Kiss's name for projects that Paul feels is a little bit over the line or something that he doesn't want to associate with or embarrasses him. Paul is easily embarrassed.
Paul's embarrassed by all the talk about all the girls he fucked.
You can see
it's disrespectful to his wife. I mean, because Paul, Paul was fucking just as many women.
Yeah, he was.
You can see it all the way back to the Tomorrow interview.
Paul's like, have some truth about it, man.
Yeah, sure. You got a little bit. You got to have a little class or whatever, right?
Yeah, Gene has no class with that. And Gene was always a smarmy Donald Trump type long before we even talked about Donald Trump.
And you see him on fucking Fox News all the time. I just want to jump through the TV and wring his fucking neck.
I like to make this point, man. This is one way in which the archetypes have changed with Kiss, man. Like, I used to subscribe to the Peter and Ace camp, the cool rock and roller camp versus, the straight, square capitalist camp in Gene and Paul. But as time goes by, you read the books, you realize Paul and, Ace and Peter are kind of impossible too, man. They're fucking infantile and ridiculous.
As musicians, man, I would not want to deal with Ace Frehley in a band.
Absolutely not.
Wouldn't even carry his own equipment before they even made it.
Yeah.
He was a flat out notorious drug addict. I mean, hey, everybody's going to be dabbling it out on the road. I get it. I'd be doing it too. But, there's a line that you don't cross, and this guy clearly
changed his mood, boy.
Mood, his life, his fucking financial status, every fucking thing. It completely changed his world.
And Peter would always.
They blew it twice, man. Two times Ace and Peter blew it, man.
It seemed like every 2 minutes, Peter would. I'm sorry, he would drop the "I'm going to quit the band" card. He would always do that. Sing the song "Around Quitting." It was always "Around Quitting."
Now this is where the division in the Kiss fans, this is where we may actually get our first hate mail. Because the Kiss fans are divided, man. There's a war going on.
There's two camps.
There's three or four camps in the Kiss fans. Because then you have your Vinny fans who swear that,
I can't get on the Vinny bus, though. He might have been writing some songs earlier than he was in the band, and even later, especially later when he was in the band, but I can't get on the Vinny bus.
But there are your Ace, there are your Kiss purists, man, who swear by the original band. I'm about the original band, but I followed Kiss. I mean, look, we followed Kiss right up to the very end. When I say the end, I say the farewell tour. I got off at the farewell tour. Mm-hmm. I still acknowledged Kiss. I still follow what I hear what they're doing. I still love talking about Kiss. But, where am I going with this? I totally fucking lost what I was saying.
You're talking about two different camps between the original fans and the newer fans.
Yeah, so there are your purists, man. You have your Ace fans who are just like, it's fucking sacrilege that Tommy Thayer is wearing his fucking makeup. And fuck Tommy Thayer. Like those guys.
I'm one of those guys. Take the fucking makeup off. Get your own makeup.
And then you have your fans who are, just everything that Kiss does, they're going to accept. Kiss can do no wrong. You fall in line with the marching orders. And so you have those two camps, and then you have kind of people in the middle, and it's just kind of like, and they're at war, man. I mean, some of the comments on some of these podcasts, I listen to a couple of the podcasts, man, and a lot of them are, a couple of them are really fucking good.
Yeah.
Comments, man, are just downright fucking vicious. And you know what? A lot of times it often becomes material for their shows, that it just becomes like, this is the show about the Kiss fans. It's fucking hilarious to watch this shit happen.
This is why we're talking about Kiss.
Taking we're sitting here and we're slamming whoever for doing this or for doing that. I'm like, okay, I'm thinking like we're going to get our first hate mail. Because God forbid you say something bad about Ace, or God forbid you say something bad about Gene.
That being said, where does Eric Carr fall into this? I mean, does he have his own? He's a likable fucking guy.
I loved Eric Carr, man. I just never liked his sound.
I
heard
shit about him that wasn't too likable.
I just never dug the double bass.
I don't know. I mean, he was always seemed like a likable cat, man. They loved him.
Yeah.
Paul and Gene fucking adored him. I mean, it's a shame he was taken from us way too young. But, I guess he has his own camp, too. It's funny that you mentioned the Vinnie Vincent camp. We'll get there when we get there.
What are your thoughts on The Elder? I love The Elder. I think it's one of my favorite Kiss albums.
I support The Elder.
Was that
it's
the
one of my very
played,
favorite Kiss
they,
albums.
They played a song on that on Solid Gold. Was it that?
They played I.
That record, right? Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, man. It's it's probably my – it might be, and I dare say this, and fuck you out there who says I'm crazy.
You're crazy.
it might be my favorite Gene album. I think Gene owns The Elder, man. The Elder is Gene's album, man. World Without Heroes, Under the Rose, Only You, You know, like, just, I mean, he fucking, just, I think he shines on that fucking album.
Gene is hot at that point, because I said.
Gene fucking shines on that
album. I said it about Creatures. I said Gene shines on Creatures. So I guess he's hot at this point in his career. Before the bottom drops out, like in 83, 84, and Gene starts writing
this
garbage.
This is where we start to disagree a little bit.
Suck this bitch. Lick it up.
Yeah, listen, yeah. Bitch.
Burn, bitch, burn.
That's my D. Yeah, everything, unholy. Like, the songwriting just went down to shitter. Terrible. Awful. But, you know what? Yeah. Here's the thing, man. I'm a Kiss purist, too. But you know what? It's because the music was better. I've tried to listen to Carnival of Souls, bro. Hit me with some of these albums from the 90s and 2000s. It's no good. It sucks. They haven't written a good song in a long... I'm sorry. Right before, Paul sounds like he's 60. It doesn't sound like old Kiss.
Right before that farewell tour, I dug the Unplugged thing that they did.
That's the thing. I want to get back to that. Wait.
Right before they did that farewell tour, they did the Unplugged gig where they brought Paul and Ace out. And I dug that. I thought that was fucking great.
Yeah.
That was killer. You know, I mean, they're playing their old shit.
Yeah.
But it was in a whole different setting. And you know, there was a buzz that that's what was going to happen. And you know.
When you say, you know, it doesn't sound like old Kiss... There's a, you know, I'm going to say there are consensus because I can't speak to the different right. different divisions in Kiss fans, among Kiss fans, but the Kiss sound, man, old Kiss, like, this is where we get into Creatures, and this is going to be the most unpopular opinion of the night. I guarantee it. If anybody's going to get hate mail, it's going to be me for what I'm about to say. Everybody seems to say that there was a big left turn where Kiss did Dynasty, Unmasked, and The Elder, where they were going through this soul searching and trying to, you know, just an identity crisis, and it was a left turn, and they got back to what they were with Creatures of the Night. Mm-hmm. I say bullshit.
Really?
There's nothing remotely in Creatures of the Night that remotely resembles Kiss. I think Creatures, rather than being a new album that went back to whatever Kiss was, I see Creatures as the fourth album in that left turn. And Kiss never got back to Kiss because...
I could see that.
Being heavy for the sake of being heavy and following a trend of metal was what Kiss was doing.
Yeah.
It was contrived. It was just as contrived as Revenge 10 years later.
But the songs are so much better.
The songs, I don't know that anything from Creatures is better than something from Dynasty or, you know, Unmasked or even
Saint
The Elder,
Sinner,
man.
Is almost Gene's best song. It's that good.
Saint
Danger,
Sinner, yeah, I'll give you that. War Machine, man.
War Machine
bores me to tears, man.
Really? Really?
I've never dug War Machine.
Wow.
I say it here, man. Shoot me, hang me.
Wow.
Poison
the title
my
track
coffee.
Is incredible.
Hey, let's beat him up.
Piss on my sneakers.
Throw them in the snake pit.
I think it's just a, you know, and here's why, man. As a guitarist, and there are plenty of guitarists listening to me, and some of you will agree with me, some of you will not. Kiss always played power chords, but they never played power chords the way they began in the 80s, man. Once they hit the Oath, everything was power chords. Prior to that, everything, most of Kiss's best guitar riffs were done on the bottom three strings of the guitar. It was Chuck Berry influence. It was those Chuck Berry chords, man. Stuff, the beginnings of Deuce. Lover All I Can.
Something important. That's important.
This is the main ingredient that separates old Kiss
from the 80s
from
cheese.
Everything from Creatures of the Night on.
Mm-hmm.
They started following metal trends.
Yeah.
Power
Did
chords.
They ever. Did
double
they ever.
Bass
power
drum.
Slop.
Kiss never got back to what they were, man. They just became a trend-following band. Just those power chords slamming into, like, just, again, it began with The Oath. Exciter, Creatures of the Night, Danger, you know, all that stuff. That has no, it bears no resemblance to Rock and Roll Over. You know, Mr. Speed, those are Chuck Berry chords.
Yeah,
they were
right.
All done on the bottom three or four strings. Everything that Kiss played after Creatures was on the top two or three strings of the guitar.
That's a very cogent point, man.
I thought Revenge was kind of like a comeback album for them.
Again, that was a comeback in the sense that they kind of got themselves out of the poser element of the 80s. It was heavy for heaviness' sake. It
man,
was just as contrived as Creatures, I think. It's a good album. It's catchy. You know, while people are hating on me right now, you know, I recognize those two albums are as good albums.
Corny, I'm sorry,
they're
man.
Good
just
Kiss
get, they
albums.
Corny,
but
like Revenge, huh? No.
I never liked Revenge. It's good for what it is, though.
I liked it.
Because I don't think that it's like Kiss's fault. It's my fault that I don't like it because we were listening to fucking hippie music in the early 90s. We were listening to the Jefferson Airplane. So our taste changed.
Yeah, we made a left turn, right?
So I'm gonna sit back here and my rant is over.
Disagreement there.
All right.
Stick and I always agree. We always disagreed on Creatures, man.
Yeah, we always disagreed on Creatures.
Really? I'm not a fan of. I mean, there are songs I like on it, but I don't see at this big monolithic fucking monumental masterpiece that Kiss fans make it out to be.
Fair enough.
Starting with Paul and Gene.
Fair enough. Yeah.
I see it as a fourth album in a left turn. And this is not Kiss. It's Kiss mm-hmm. being more badass.
I like the point about the fourth left turn. I like that.
But it's not, you know. And then from there, I mean, Vinny was still writing a lot of their songs. Lick It Up.
Let's talk about
Gene was still writing good songs. Again, I'm not crazy about War Machine, but I do like Saint and Sinner. I like Not for the Innocent off of Lick It Up.
That was a very good song.
I don't like Fits Like a Glove because once, you know, Fits Like a Glove was the beginning of that fucking shit period.
And then they know what we're talking about when we say that. Regarding Vinny, man, I know you were never a big Vinny guy. He was a very self-indulgent guitar player. Of course, Paul and Gene always spoke of the high point in the show when Vinny would begin his guitar solo and everybody go out in the parking lot to get high. You know, very self-indulgent. However,
he has his.
I feel like such a dick now.
I think Vinny had style and panache way more so than the Mark St. John sucked. Bruce Kulick. I like Vinny Vincent and more style and panache than Bruce Kulick ever did.
Vinny's got a loyal. Very
I would not go that far.
Listen, I don't. No.
Vincent's no way,
good.
Man.
He's a good guitar player, man.
Vinny Vincent?
Yeah. He's a fucking really good guitar player.
I thought he was... I don't know. I can't go there with Vinny, man. I never liked anything about Vinny Vincent.
He's a douchebag, but he's a really good guitar
player. I never liked anything about Vinny Vincent. I never... he wrote some good songs. He's a talented songwriter.
He was like I'll give him that. The whiz kid.
But that was my lowest point with Kiss, man. When I found out that Ace left the band... I shut down, man. That was it. I was done for a few years.
Ace wasn't even on that record. Yeah. Like that. It was still getting paid.
I came back for Animalize and Asylum. I kind of just like, you know, I got Lick It Up. I mean, I bought those albums, but it was more out of curiosity.
Hey, I liked them.
They sounded great live, man. I mean, the Lick It Up, Creatures of the Night tour. Let's listen to those recordings compared to
the Crazy
Nights recordings a couple years later. It's so much more ballsy.
I hate Kiss with Vinny. Yeah. I hate those cons. I like those bootlegs.
Man, he was fucking blistering,
those
man.
Those tapes at the LA.
I know
you're
a bigger Kiss fan than me, but fucking Vinny was a blistering.
I hate Kiss with Vinny.
Like, he was a real fucking asshole.
That fucking wah-wah bar and that wah-wah-wah-wah. Every fucking goddamn song you play has got to have that shit in it, man. Fuck you.
I loved them.
But you know what? Any fan of the new Kiss, I'm sorry, man. Listen to the recordings from the Love Gun tour. Listen to the recordings from 1997.
That's what I'm talking about.
No comparison,
I'm not talking
about...
They
lost their balls.
Now, let me clarify. I'm not talking about Lick It Up and Creatures. Again, those are good albums. There are things about both those albums that I'm not crazy about. I think Creatures is overrated, but I still think it's a good album, okay? I still think Lick It Up is a good album. When I say I hate Kiss with Vinny, I'm talking about having to listen to Vinny play Dr. Love and Firehouse and Cold Gin and Detroit. It just did not fucking click. It was like painting a fucking mustache on the Mona Lisa. It was like flinging shit on a Picasso painting.
Wow.
It was... fucking like putting a cheese grater against your dick, man.
I don't know who's going to fill those shoes at that point. That's a tough job filling in for Ace Frehley, man. He did have a tough task ahead of him, man. That's for sure.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that fact at all. Yeah. It's like fucking somebody trying to replace Eddie Van Halen, and Van Halen is not going to happen. Yeah. But the guy, he did it. He did it.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, but what direction do they go if they don't find Vinny? But where was Kiss without Vinny? Where would Kiss be without Vinny at that point? Where are they?
With some other guitarist.
Yeah, like who, though? Come on. Think of guitarists that maybe broke out of that era, and who could you place in Kiss more than Vinny?
I can't answer that question now, man. It would have been an unknown guitarist.
Well, I mean, let's put Vinny, let's hypothetically
they
say
they
could
have gotten Bruce Kulick. They could have gotten Bruce Kulick earlier than they did.
Could have put a wig on Bob Kulick. That's what I want them to do.
I was, you know, let's say Vinnie Vincent invasion is still going to happen, and Vinnie's a player, obviously, and you know, let's say that there's other.
He didn't
players
last too
became,
long in that either.
No, he didn't.
His own band.
Yeah, but he's a dick. I'm not saying he's not a dick. Ace Frehley's a dick.
Sure
he's,
he is.
But Vinnie's a big asshole. Not to mention that the guy was fucking selling merchandise that he said that he played with.
Oh,
he was fucking
yeah.
skating on people out of him.
Yeah.
He was fucking milking.
He ripped people,
people
off. Bro.
He ripped a lot of people off. He's yeah. a real jerk off.
He's
when
an
it comes
asshole.
To that. Even Gene and Paul welcomed him back into the camp. He wrote stuff with them again and then turned around and tried to fuck him again and sue him out of royalties. And Gene was just like, I'm done with him.
Yeah.
I'm fucking done with him.
Yeah.
And when Gene Simmons says something like that, you're fucking gone.
Yeah.
But I'm just trying to defend the guy because not for nothing, but Kiss was... I can't say they yeah. were done.
This is just opinion.
Kiss,
this is my opinion.
Where
That's
would they
all
have been
is,
without
you know?
Finding Vinnie Vincent?
Yeah. It's just my opinion, man. You know? I mean, look, the guy's human.
I think he was better than Bruce. I mean, Bruce is a great... I don't know. I think Bruce is more of a great studio guy. It's, again, opinion.
Vinny
what is
never
it, yeah,
played.
What is Bruce Kulick missing? He's missing something, and I can't find the words for what Bruce Kulick is missing, dude. Like, he just
maybe
doesn't.
He's got like a string that's out of tune or something.
No, no.
It's whatever that is, dude.
You know like, what? I just the fucking playing 6 billion notes an hour, a mile, you know, like 6 billion notes a fucking second.
It was like Mark
does
Saint
not
John shit.
Cut it, man.
And
you know,
Bruce
it's
does
just,
do some
just,
of that.
Just fucking total masturbation on the guitar, man.
He's a cool dude.
Wankery.
I like
it is
song.
Pure fucking wankery at its worst, man.
Yep.
It's just and that Invasion album, like just the worst trends of the 80s, all
so
on
back
one
to
album.
Vinnie.
Man.
We're back to Vinnie Vincent.
You want
to
get a good
oh,
laugh?
We're still on Vinnie.
Yeah.
I thought we had
no,
moved on to Bruce.
Now we're back
no.
on Vinnie now.
Holy shit!
No, Bruce Kulick, man. I mean, look, he was in the band where at the height of their I guess their second peak, which wasn't all that big, but hey, they were still headlining arenas. And they were still
yeah, making records like hot.
They were still
shade.
Able to play the Garden. They were.
They could still play the Garden. I think
they haven't played the Garden in.
They could.
They not in the current situation.
I disagree with that. If Kiss was to say that they were going to tour and play the Garden, the
not
next
on
week,
the, in the current play. Lineup, Kiss has
you're
only
you're
played
getting
the,
them started.
Kiss has only
That's
played
good.
The
That's
Garden twice since Ace left the band. Kiss has only played the Garden twice. Once was opening for Aerosmith in 2003, and the other was they had to lure people with the Alive 35. They have not been back. They have not been back in New York City since
we
2009.
Saw Kiss in the Garden.
Kiss has not played a proper show since 2009 in New York City. They won't even play Jones Beach anymore unless Def Leppard or Poison or Motley Crue is with them.
Where's that awful Asylum concert we saw? Was that at the Garden, dude, in 85?
No,
that was
that
at the Garden.
Tour.
It was the Garden. Yeah,
oh,
but they were still able to they were still able to play the Garden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw my Brendan Byrne.
Yeah.
Doing 13 songs, a drum solo, Paul talking about his dick for a half hour. Good night.
We got through the 80s, man. I mean, look, we followed them through the 80s, man. They were doing during those, you know, 13-song shows. And yeah. In between 13 songs was a bass solo and a guitar solo and a drum solo.
Pulled dividing the crowd
fucking,
in half.
And then they went backstage and counted all of our fucking money.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they did.
That's just the way we are, right? You know?
Yeah.
They could wheel Bruce out in a fucking wheelchair. Bruce Springsteen that is out in a wheelchair, and he can fucking blow on his harmonica talking about fucking Crazy Janie and the Mission Man. And then he can wheel him right backstage again, and he'll count our fucking money. Mm-hmm. That's what it's all about, merchandising and money.
Kiss's old concert was Bruce's warm-up, his sound check.
Getting back to the Garden thing, I mean, Kiss now, in their current lineup, they play what they're able to play.
Hey, I'm not denying the fact that they sound like shit. I've said it on
well,
the show.
No, I mean,
they
yeah.
sound awful.
Yeah.
Not even good. Yeah. I would be disappointed if I paid mm-hmm. money to go see Kiss play. And I said it, well, Priest, too. Those two bands were in a fucking show that used to be Castle's The Download Fest. It used to be Donington Fest. To where fucking Muse was the fucking headliner.
Yeah.
You got Judas Priest and Kiss on the same fucking bill, and Muse is the fucking headliner.
Damn.
Let that fucking sink in for a second.
Yeah.
That's how bad. The biggest fucking thrill I got was Paul fucking flying over the fucking crowd to the fucking tower, and I hoped that the fucking wire broke and he fell into the fucking crowd.
Oh, shit.
Yep.
So I'm not defending their live show. However, I honestly still do believe that they would be able to play the Garden. I do. If they would need
a gimmick or a co-headliner or Ace to play the Garden again, or else Bill it as the final show. They need a lure. They cannot fucking play they can't even play Jones Beach right now unless they have a co-headliner. There's a reason Kiss has not set foot in New York City, a Kiss concert, since 2009.
Mm.
Okay, 2012, when they came to New York, they played Jones Beach with Def Leppard. Oh, I'm sorry, Motley Crue.
And they did that at
PNC
Arts Center, too.
Yeah, so like the amphitheaters. They have not played the Garden since they did the Alive 35. And they drew a lot of people, man. They sold out the available tickets. It was 14,000-something seats.
But I think that's the amount of people that would fit in
Kiss
Madison
still
Square Garden.
Draws, man. Kiss still
PNC
draws.
PNC Arts Center, all them people out there, I think
In 2017, man, Kiss would not fill up the Garden on their own. They would need a big support act.
I don't think Def Leppard is that big of a support act, though.
Def Leppard is just as popular as Kiss right now.
And they are fucking horrible live. Joe Elliott can't sing fucking God Bless America anymore. He's so
I know.
Bad.
It's just age.
I don't want to say. I'm not taking anything away from Joe Elliott because I like Def Leppard.
No, it's age, man.
Age
it's a young man's game. Young man's
guy.
Game. Yeah. Mike, where's the sound effect, Ben?
I'm just saying, when I say the Def Leppard.
Destroying people here. Bring that back, Dan.
Boom, boom, boom.
Blow
fire,
some shit up.
Fire.
Allow time for the sound effect.
But,
okay.
He's got to add that later, I think.
Yeah, I need space for that.
I mean, I thought about that for a while. What happened to that? Bring that back.
But, you know, they sell out. They sell out. Yeah, they sell out. They sell out smaller venues, but it is what it is. You know, they're out there. There are people that say, hey, they need to hang it up. Paul's voice. Yeah, we know that.
It's most of it. That
is most of it.
I'd say that's two-thirds, and the other third is that you got two guys that look like fucking Paul. I mean, that look like Ace and fucking Peter up there. That aren't Ace and Peter.
Yeah.
That does bother me.
The problem,
if it's true that Ace is getting paid for that, it bothers me a little bit less.
The problem that I have with it, and something that maybe Kiss fans don't think about, is that certain things in rock and roll, man, there is a sacred element to rock and roll. There's a sacred element in the sense of, you know, Exile on Main Street, Rolling Stones, Sgt. Pepper, certain things that are just so fucking sacred that are untouchable, man.
Okay.
Once you touch them in a way that's kind of, that takes the dignity out of it and the integrity out of it and just the whole sacred element to it,
it becomes
cheapened.
Let our kids look at the videos on YouTube. I don't want them to see them sounding like this.
Man, and saying that this face is disposable and expendable, that the image,
the original members of Kiss are
expendable, is cheapening their legacy. And there are certain things that just should not be touched. The original Kiss in those images is one of them. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, again, anybody would fucking take those jobs. Tommy and Eric Singer, Tommy Thayer and Eric Singer are doing their fucking job,
they're
man.
Doing anything that we would
they're
do
doing
too.
Anybody would fucking hop on that job.
They're providing for their fucking family, being a musician.
But there are just certain things
that competition with Gene Simmons.
Don't get us wrong, Tommy Thayer. Don't get us wrong.
But they're just as fans, man. There are just certain sacred elements to rock and roll music. And certain things should not be tampered with because you cheapen it. You know, you basically say, this is not that sacred. This is not that important. You know, we can make one guy look like the guy before. And it's just, that's my problem with it. That's my problem with the makeup thing. Again, does it ruin my whole image of Kiss? No, I do think that they cheapen their legacy by just pissing all over it the way they do.
Would you go see the original four members if they announced a shut it down tour, kind of like Motley Crue did? Our names are in fucking blood on the contract. We're done after this tour.
Yeah, I would go. If they did it, yeah. I've seen the current lineup. You know, I saw the Kiss Motley Crue tour, man. You saw it. You know,
yeah.
I'm not saying, oh, I'm not going to support this band and, fuck them.
I'm just
and,
asking the question. I didn't think you were saying that.
No. But
you're
know.
Just in a mood tonight.
No,
man.
I'm in the mood because I'm trying to appeal to Kiss fans out there because I know there are Kiss fans that are going to listen to this. And I know that the big dialogue, endless dialogue out there, man, there are just like, if you're on board with Tommy Thayer, you're a fucking traitor, you know, you're and vice versa. If you don't support Kiss now. You're a traitor. You're not a real Kiss fan. You know, there's these certain very specific ideas of what constitutes being a real Kiss fan, quote unquote.
I'm a real Kiss fan.
Yeah.
I don't dig what they're doing for the same reasons you don't dig what they're doing.
Right.
And I'm a big Ace Frehley fan.
Right.
I don't hate fucking Thayer because he's out there. You know,
right. But we're in the middle of it all watching all these theatrics of fucking Kiss fans go at it. Like, and it's funny. It's hilarious, man. But at the same time, it's fucking stupid.
It is fucking stupid.
I am an Ace guy, man, but at the same time, I'll be the first person to say when Ace is fucking full of shit or when he's doing something wrong or when he can't play or when he's fucking up.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at the same time, there was something special in that original lineup. There's a reason that Kiss with Tommy Thayer and Eric Singer are out there and 95% of their set list is pre-1979
songs. Exactly. They're not writing songs like Dr. Love and Take Me with Tommy Thayer and Eric
Singer. If Sonic Boom and Monster are such great albums, why aren't they playing those songs?
And to hear guys on other podcasts talk about some of these songs on Sonic Boom, like they're so good, I don't get it. It just makes you yearn for the halcyon days of when you didn't know their personalities, when Gene was the mean guy and Peter was the cat, and it was the guy with the one
the
star in his eye, and the guy with the two stars on his eye, and that was it. You didn't know anybody. I mentioned the archetypes kind of changing before. I'll say something positive now. You know what I kind of feel the older I get? That maybe Gene was a pretty darn good bass player. And maybe his bass playing is maybe a little underrated. You think that's possible? You think that Gene's actually pretty damn good?
I think.
And people slight him as a player?
I think Gene's best bass work was when Ace played the bass.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I got your answer then. I was going to ask, because I don't have an answer. What is Gene's most challenging song to like play and sing
at
the same
time?
What is his most impressive moment? Because I don't know. I hear Gene doing a lot of funky walking. I don't know, man. I kind of get up.
Does he have to be singing it and playing or just playing it?
Both, man. But God forbid, I get a Paul McCartney feel from Simmons sometimes. I know that's fucking blasphemy, man. But I think Gene...
He moves around a little bit.
No,
on, like,
they're,
nothing
they're,
to
they're
lose.
Big. They're big. They're big Beatles fans, man.
Gene is a bit on that, but he's Beatles not really fan. Singing it.
You can hear the Beatles in Gene, man.
Yeah.
Listen to that solo. Listen to his solo album, man.
Totally.
You know, Mr. Make Believe. See you tonight.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, Nowhere to Hide, man.
Yeah.
Fucking pure Beatles.
I think maybe the guy can play. Even though he didn't take his fucking outfit off for weeks at a time. You know, Gene used to smell fucking horribly in the 70s, man. You read the biographies. He used to leave that shit on after the show and day, and he used to stink like shit.
I like reading the stories about the paint, how they were just coming around learning how to put the paint on and like fucking trial and error. Like,
you know,
it would
what?
Be dripping off their faces and they'd be making it up on the sides of the stage and shit.
Why? Yeah, you know what? Even when they were fucking huge, they were still doing their own makeup. How come they don't got like girls doing it for them? Like, let me sit back and chill. Let somebody else put their makeup on. They always did their own makeup.
That's an interesting
question. You know what irks me about Gene today, man? why is like as Gene gets older, right, and your face gets kind of chubbier, is his
Gene's
makeup as thin as it is? Shouldn't his makeup be getting thicker? Like, look at his makeup now. It's thinner than it ever was.
And Gene's face, it makes Gene's face look all fat. No, it's because Gene's gotten fatter.
I
the makeup
that.
Is just as thick as it always was. He's just got a fat head now.
Like gotten wider.
Remember how thick his makeup was around Dynasty?
Yeah.
Around Creatures? You know, and then it kind of got thin again, you know. I don't know,
his
man. But now it's like totally
narrow
thin.
Narrow and thin, right?
His head was narrow and thin. Now it's thick and full.
And his face is looking wider now because his makeup is so thin and pointy now.
His face is all full of matzah.
Paul's got to cake the paint into the wrinkles.
Yeah.
Starting to look like my grandmother.
Yeah, seriously.
Grandma,
man.
Stanley.
You know, rock and roll belongs
Stanley.
To the young guys, man. Mike's right. What you did was sacred. Now it's starting to get embarrassing. And that goes for a lot of you rockers from the 70s.
You know,
hang it up.
I'm going to say something nice,
hang
too.
Hang it the fuck up.
I'm going to thank Kiss for getting me into rock
and
roll.
Thanks, Kiss.
Man.
You did the
thank
same for
you.
Us, man. We
you
love
did.
You.
You
did.
We
love Kiss.
It's almost like you know. It's funny that you say that because it's almost like Kiss fans now. Like if you read, and again, I'm not talking about one group of people. You know, there are lots of again, we listen to Kiss podcasts. You know who you are, but a lot of it's almost like the discussion now is almost like fans are almost trying to speed up or insist on the end of Kiss. You know, they're all like sitting there arguing over what the last concert is going to be like, who's going to be at the last concert, who's not going to be at the last concert, you know, what they should do, how they should do it, how they should go out. You know, I mean, yeah, they have a couple more years left. Gene kind of talked about that in some interview the other day.
We've mentioned it on this show. There will never be and to Kiss.
Yeah.
There's going to be four
Kiss
players.
Kiss 2.0.
Yeah, there's going to be four players up there.
Want to know what's interesting? I'd be more ready to see Kiss 2.0 with a new Gene and a new Paul than I am seeing them with where they are right now.
I think I got to agree with that, you Stick. Know?
But, you know, they again, Paul.
And just getting that crunchy sound back again, man.
Yeah. And just to play devil's advocate, you know, I mean, look, rock bands, they do it as long as they want to, man. The Stones are still doing it. God bless them. You know, we should never take our rock stars for granted, man. They're out there doing it. There's going to be a time when there's no Kiss. There's going to be a time when there's no Rolling Stones, man. Look, fucking two of the Beatles are dead. Two of the Beatles are gone. We never got a Beatles reunion, man. But at the same time, there's that element that is just painful. It's just painful to see Paul not be able to hit those notes, man. You know, he was the first to say, like, we don't want to be the band that stays too long. Our fans will tell us when it's ready. There's a reason that, you know, and it's not just Ace and Peter, man. It's not just the fact that Ace and Peter aren't there, man. There's a reason that, it's just painful, man.
Mm-hmm.
When you lower the key, one of the common things that bands do as they get older, when a vocalist is not able to hit the high notes that they used to do, is they lower their songs, the keys, like a half step. Sometimes they'll lower it a full step to hit those notes. And when that happens, man, as you plunge beneath, I guess, what is called the subsonic range, man, you lose, like, something happens in the dynamics. You lose things.
Sure.
Things become inaudible, man. That you once heard.
A ear that knows that fucking song through decades and decades. Most bands
listen. Just listening
down to do down. They do tune down.
It's painful to listen to Creatures of the Night in such a low key.
Yeah, but most bands
it doesn't work.
Are going to tune differently because they got. You have to.
Yeah, and sometimes it works, but sometimes it doesn't. You know, like if you listen to like Elton John, he tunes his songs down so low,
now,
man.
Yeah.
He's probably in C at this point.
Yeah.
You know, where Kiss probably is in D, you know, they're probably tuning down to D, maybe C sharp at this point. Some of those songs are so low, man, that and Paul is still struggling. You know, I get it. You know, everybody's sick of hearing about Paul's voice. But, you know, sometimes it's sad watching this happen to your rock stars, man, rather than, you know, have the chance to, well, okay, watch them go out on top, and then you sit and say, well, they went out on top, but what if they could have continued another 5-10 years? But this is what happens when this is what happens when you continue.
But if you went out on top, because the Stones, see, first of all, Mick's not really pressing, he's not pushing his vocals as much as a guy like Paul Stanley is, and so you go out with a whimper
rather than a bang.
No, I'd rather just go out, man, because the Stones could still put out a record and still be okay. And still, they're not going out really with a whimper.
It's
going
to be interesting because, you know, there's a lot of speculation now about another Kiss album, maybe probably one last Kiss studio album.
I hope that they don't do it.
They haven't done it right in so long. Look, we just watched a horrifying Ozzy video before we started the show tonight of Ozzy sounding positively awful. Remember when Muhammad Ali came back to boxing in 1980 and thought he could fight Larry Holmes? And he was a sad shell. That's what all these guys are like. They're like punch drunk Muhammad Ali's. It's time, boys, to move it out, man.
You know what's a great thing about what you just said there is that when Ozzy was touring with those two tours with Black Sabbath, those are Black Sabbath songs. Those are not Ozzy
Lung busters,
songs.
Man.
They're a completely different animal than Black Sabbath songs. Black Sabbath songs are a lot easier to sing than Ozzy solo stuff.
Yeah.
So when he's out there doing like Bark at the Moon or that, he's not hitting that. He sounded really good on the Sabbath tours, both tours.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So, but now he has to go back in there. And, you know, there were
Bark at the Moon is the song we listened to.
Yeah,
didn't
sound
good.
From the Eclipse thing.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
And even I heard a piece of him doing something else because I follow Zakk Wylde on Facebook and Twitter, and he's touring with him again, and he was posting some stuff, and just Ozzy just doesn't have it. He's fucking 70-something years old. But again, the Sabbath stuff's a little easier to see.
Yeah, you saw Sabbath recently and you were impressed.
Yeah, I loved them. They were fucking great.
Right.
They were really good.
Right.
But, you know, the Ozzy stuff's a little bit different.
Yeah,
it's,
the solo stuff's a little
higher.
From a vocal
register, perspective, man. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And Zakk has backed him up fucking a million times. Ozfest in particular. Zakk had to, like, sing.
Yeah. What were your thoughts on the, like, as far as, like, the 80s Kiss albums, man? So, like, we get into, like, you know, Animal Eyes, Asylum, Crazy Nights, that whole period, Hot in the Shade. Were you still
on board? I did like Animal Eyes. Hot in the Shade, not so much. It was a girl. It was a chick album. You know, and Crazy Nights was the same thing. It was a chick album. And chicks were listening to it. I went to that tour with a girl. I went to that show with a girl. I was like, yeah, I'll go. Yeah, it's Kiss. You're hot. Let's go. Let's go see Kiss. That's how it was.
Yeah, before 88, when we made a dramatic left turn and became hippies and started listening to Dylan and the Dead and all that, I was still into Kiss.
I did like Animal Eyes.
Those albums have not aged well, though. I liked the albums
when they came out. You know, every album that came out, you know, but I was always disappointed in the show.
Yeah.
Animal Eyes, Asylum, whatever, you know, Crazy Nights. It was the same show, plug in two new songs.
I didn't care same, about the same show Love at that Gun. Point. I was drunk. Out
same
of
like Love Cold Gun story. Firehouse, Love Gun.
Every other word out of Paul's Rock mouth is fuck.
Maybe Dr. Love. Yeah.
You know, and Paul, you know, talked about that period as far as everything was totally sped up. Everything was played too fast. But I have another unpopular opinion. Besides Creatures and Revenge, man. Is that, I think Hot in the Shade is a good album. That's my unpopular opinion. It doesn't get enough love. I think if you trim four songs off of it, it's a solid album. I think the biggest problem, and I think a lot of Kiss fans will agree, that Hot in the Shade was too long. There were just too many songs. Mm. Even Bruce Kulick said the same thing.
Are you chopping forever off of that record?
No, I would not chop forever off of it. I would leave it because they needed a hit song, and I think it worked out very well for them. They needed a hit song.
It was a huge
I don't think it's any... It's a good ballad, and it's not any worse than any other Michael Bolton song out there, man. You know,
yeah, that time, yeah. I dated this girl who fucking loved that
They were following following trends, man. You know, it was the late 80s.
This is gonna be our song.
But I think Gene started writing good songs. Like, you know, Gene's songs were better on Hot in the Shade than they were on the last three albums together, man. Betrayed
I like the
was good.
Cover.
Prisoner of Love, I thought was good. Somewhere Between Heaven and Hell. I think these are good songs, man. I don't know what it is about Hot in the Shade that people thought was unfinished or loose ends or just, I mean, my only problem with Hot in the Shade was that it was too long and it had some neat, like four needless songs on it. If they would have left it at 11 songs instead of 15, I think you have a solid album in there and a much better album than Crazy Nights.
Man, I literally thought I was Jim Morrison when that album came out. I had no idea what was going on.
Burly beard, the beer
leather,
belly.
Leather pants, had leather pants. Yeah. Didn't smile that whole year. Not once. All right, Kiss fans, you got your fucking episode. I don't mean to end it. But you got it.
Yeah,
right.
Well,
you got got what you want.
If anybody's still with us,
love us, hate us.
These are just our opinions. We love Kiss.
We do.
We celebrate Kiss, man. It's just an interesting thing. The division in the Kiss audience, man. Kiss fans.
Sharing the frustration.
Let's just love Kiss, man.
We all bear this burden together.
They're still here. I'm not saying hang it up, man. I mean, would I have liked to have seen them ended at the farewell tour? Yeah, man. I don't think we would have missed anything in the last 15 years, man. There's nothing that's happened in the past 15 years that I think would have changed. It didn't change anything, man. What it did was prolong a lot of, you know, a lot of happy experiences for Kiss fans that don't want Kiss to end, man.
Amen.
There are still people going to see Kiss, man. They fucking come out happy. There's, they're always, it's still a good time to a lot of people, man.
Gun to the head, favorite Kiss song.
Favorite Kiss song, 100,000 years.
Black Diamond.
100,000 years. 100,000 years, man.
I'm going to go Strutter.
All right, let's do Gun to the Head really
quick,
man.
I like Strutter a lot.
All right, what's your favorite?
I like 100,000 years a lot, but I'm going to go Black Diamond.
Favorite Kiss studio album. I'm not saying best. Let's just do favorites.
Yes, do favorites.
Since it's just best. About our opinions.
Favorite
studio album.
It's a boring answer, but Destroyer.
I was going the same route. I was going to say.
That's your favorite?
Yeah, it's
mine too. Or Higher Than Hell. Higher Than Hell, I love
too.
I'm
going to say Destroyer. That's the fucking candy-coated fucking answer right there.
Might
have been epic because you were close to picking it.
Yeah.
My favorite is probably Hotter Than Hell. Or depending on the day of the week, Hotter Than Hell or Rock and Roll Over.
We like the muddy production of Hotter Than Hell that so many people knock.
Yeah.
I like that.
The sludginess of Hotter Than Hell, man. Should not be tampered with.
Yeah, total.
Least favorite Kiss album, studio album.
Least favorite studio album. I'm going to go with Hot in the Shade.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's you know what? The album where they really thought they were grunge, The Carnival of Souls, I hate that shit when I hear it.
Yeah.
So I might say that.
Yeah.
And you?
I'm going to go with Monster. Mm.
Least favorite song?
Probably something off of Monster. No, that's not fair to say, because I've only heard it a handful of times. Least favorite song, probably Burn, Bitch, Burn.
Yeah, that's a great choice, dude. That's a great choice. That's my answer, too. I hate that song.
I'm not a huge fan of Unholy.
You're not a fan of Unholy?
Let's put the X in sex. I don't really
that
dig
song
that
sucks,
either.
Too. That's when I was Jim Morrison.
Read My Body.
Paul Stanley doing Let's
Put Read My Body is one of the songs I would have trimmed off of Hot in the Shade. Favorite Ace Frehley guitar solo?
Calling Dr. Love is pretty fucking banging, man. Actually, you should listen to that. That's up there.
I have a few that I'm
Ace
just
Ace Frehley and his guitar shock me. There's
yeah.
Just,
no, I would. I got to go. I got to go with Shock Me.
Yeah.
Runner up would be the second solo in Black Diamond.
All right.
Yeah, that's fucking, that's a nice one. When I think about it, your pick was fucking great.
Which one?
Black Diamond.
Yeah. What is,
I went wimpy and picked Strutter.
Now you'll think of your real answer later on tonight.
Yeah,
when
I'll be fucking
most,
how the fuck did I say Firehouse or something fucking cool? Yeah.
Most
fucking moron.
All right, let's do most underrated Kiss song and most overrated Kiss song. So let's start with most overrated Kiss song.
Rock and Roll All Night.
Yeah.
I never thought of that.
I agree.
Rock and Roll All Night. I think it's a great song, but it's not my pick. It's definitely overplayed.
I'd be happy if I never ever heard it again. I'm almost happy. I can almost say that.
I agree.
I can almost say it.
Mine is War Machine.
Yeah. Yeah, Mike's got a thing. He's got a boner for War Machine, this guy.
Underrated.
Underrated song. King of the Nighttime World.
Wow. Yeah.
Underrated, really? It's on Destroyer, man. It's a masterpiece.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Underrated. You know, a couple of the you know what? Plaster Caster is an underrated song. That's a pop gem.
Yeah.
Overlooked. Yeah, that should have been a lot bigger. That should have been a lot bigger than it was. That's a good one. Fuck.
I'm going to go with Naked City.
That's good too.
Most overlooked Kiss song, man. Naked unmasked. City. Yeah.
Got Nothing to Lose.
Mm.
Hell yeah.
Nothing to Lose.
Oh, baby. Fucking Peter singing that on the live record.
Somebody misheard Kiss lyrics.
Oh, man.
Remember I Stole Your Love when Paul Stanley says, "Ban, now you're failing your test." When you were a kid, you heard
failing
tits,
your tit,
tits,
tit,
tits,
tit, 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 tit. He said tit.
There's a couple of those.
I wouldn't even know where to start, man. There was so much. And to this day, man, when I hear certain Kiss songs, I still hear what I was hearing when I was six. Like, I still hear those, like,
how about,
wrong
how
words.
How about an image? I mean, you know, there's an image that we all would... I think you and I have discussed this. It's the one where they're standing in, like, that in the Japanese robes, in the kabuki robes or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
With
that's
the
great.
Fucking snow coming down, and I got the red candles
that's
and shit
great.
Like that. It's, like, my favorite all-time image.
Bob Gruen, man. Yeah.
I like the pictures of them on top of the building, too,
oh,
man.
God,
man, right?
Iconic.
I can't think of, like, a one shot of the band... But I think the most badass picture, and this is just like, again, I'm straying a little bit. I think the most badass picture of Gene ever taken, most iconic badass picture of Gene is what we see on Alive 2.
Absolutely. Hmm. Without question. Yeah.
I was looking at that the other day, and I was just, that is just fucking badass.
It's insane.
I think a lot of the Alive, like that same photo session, man, from Alive 2, man, just a lot of stuff from... Some of the definitive shots of each individual member on stage with their instrument or whatever. I don't know if I would. I don't know if I could come up
with
just like
crowd,
one.
Right? The
gatefold. The Alive 2 Love Gun stage. I don't know if there's one image of Kiss, the full band, that I could come up with, man.
Remember that Spirit of 76 poster too with Peter with the
Yeah.
band and they were like with the drum. Yeah, that was pretty cool. The American flag. That was cool.
What else? Gun to the head, man. Just got to be more gun to the heads.
I think we covered it.
Yeah.
I can tell you about my dog Buttons eating my Peter Criss doll, and I cried like a fucking baby. I could tell
you cried, man.
Yeah.
I got
Peter
in a lot
Criss
of trouble.
Laying on the ground, all fucking distorted looking, man. Fucking dog ate it. I cried.
I got in a lot of trouble buying Kiss cards, man. I bought $10 worth of Kiss cards. $10 was a lot of money in 1978. I bought the whole box.
That was good going with the Kiss cards.
Away, I had the Star Wars set too, man.
Oh, man. So I guess, are we done? We're finished here? Is there anything else we want to add? I mean, there's a bunch of stuff we didn't talk about, but you know what? It's obvious, you know, we don't love the later albums as much as, you know, I mean, Kiss for me, I get, again, personally, Kiss for me ended at the Farewell Tour, where I kind of stopped, you know, just investing myself, my interest in the ongoing idea of the band as a creative entity. I heard Sonic Boom, I heard Monster, you know, I didn't like anything about any of it. I didn't even like Psycho Circus that much.
I haven't liked either
the,
from what
the
I've
title
heard,
track and the very
I've
last,
tried,
you know,
I'm
Journey
sorry.
Of a Thousand Years. I thought was a really good song, but I guess we'll end it there.
My last thing is that anybody listening, if you can either prove or debunk that about the makeup, about the imagery, if Ace still owns that and was leasing it to Gene and Paul, I mean, give us an email on the website or on our Facebook page.
Yeah,
does he
the question is, does he lease it or does he have anything to do with it at all?
From what I read, he still owns it.
He does.
And he leases it to Paul and Gene.
I don't think he does.
When did that end? Because, I mean, it didn't look like it was updated that recently.
Yeah, no, I don't think Ace owns his makeup. But again, somebody let us know.
I'm going to look a little further into that, too. But I mean, that was one of the things that I wanted to drop as a nugget, and I'm glad I did because it opened up some discussion.
No, I say Ace doesn't own the makeup, but anything we talked about, you know, again, these are our opinions. You know, they're our opinions. I understand that there are probably people out there that are like, you know, fuck you. I can't believe what you said about Vinnie Vincent. Vinnie Vincent's coming back. He's coming back in Atlanta. Right? Anyway. But yeah, Rock Under Fire. Peace.
See ya. Later on.